Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a booming personality on the podcast to talk about traveling across the country to face colossal culinary challenges and his most difficult to date. He is a food lover, actor, restaurant industry veteran, and the host of Man vs. Food. It's Casey Webb. Casey, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Woo! I'm doing great. Thanks, Jamie. This is so fun. I just love talking generally. So the fact that we get to talk all things food and Food Network and life and lifestyle is exciting for me. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And a fellow Brooklynite, as I understand it, are there any enormous or crazy foods around Brooklyn that I need to see to believe?
So there's no shortage of amazing foods throughout Brooklyn, as we know.
Of course.
Whether it be huge or hot or small or not, there's a variety of things we can choose from, right? So I don't know. I think you can literally quite honestly put your finger on the map of Brooklyn being the biggest borough and just go to any neighborhood and you're going to find something that's delicious and tasty and worth the travels. But I mean, I don't know. You can just go right to Junior's and get a whole cheesecake and call it a day, right? Because not every place has a huge or hot option. You know, there's a lot of hot where I was living for many years was Lefferts Gardens, which is Little Caribbean or Little Caribbean, which is incredible. It's also historic district of Brooklyn. It's near Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. It's right near Prospect Park. The Q, B&Q are right there. It's like access to everything. That place is incredible. And there was a lot of hot food there, which was luckily moved there and had all this beautiful food from the Caribbean at my disposal. BC before Casey and the beginning of the show and like colleges around the country, they would have these challenges, you know. So a lot of those new ones have popped up that I don't even know about. You know, quite honestly, I don't necessarily search for them when it's my time off.
That's fair.
Time to digest while I'm off the road, you know, and when it comes time back to work, we find those places where we can go, you know, do the show. So
what are some of your places in Little Caribbean?
Ooh, by name? It's so funny because it's like hot pot, you know, and it's like,
yeah, you're like, just know where it is.
Physically, I know how to get there. I could close my eyes and my dog will bring me there. You know, I did since leave Brooklyn to come back to Jersey for a hot minute. You know, family, they're getting older. So I crossed the waters and I came back here for a while. So I've been spending a lot of my time down here. But yeah, I do make it in there to walk those streets to get the beauty about the city and what I love about New York. You know, I've been there since the early 90s. mid to late 90s, rather, is that you could pretty much walk anywhere and find food. And the best way to see the city is to walk. And then when you get tired, you jump on a train and go home, or jump in a cab, or, a pedicab. Have you ever been in one of those, you know?
Yes, not in New York, but yes, I have been in a pedicab at some point. Yeah. But
it's a fun way to travel.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned New Jersey, which is where you grew up. And I know you worked in the food industry kind of up and down the Jersey Shore growing up.
Yeah.
How could you best describe that slice of the country as you know it and not necessarily how it's been portrayed
on TV?
Yeah, exactly.
TV is a beautiful, it's a great way to see the world. And before you travel anywhere, typically we do that. Right now with the advent, it seems like it just came up. We discovered the internet yesterday, but with social media and how much people are traveling these days, it's very visual and we can go on these journeys, you know. And TV for me as a kid was always an escape. And like, I always wondered about these places that I would eventually travel to. And very much like New Jersey, I don't think it's given, you know, it's given a broad stroke of what New Jersey represents. It's 130 miles of beaches, you know, so there's no shortage of beach, and it's also the Garden State. So there's tons of great farm to table foods, during in season. So there's so much great fresh and available food, and not necessarily, you know, how it's been depicted on TV as like a microcosm in the summer at the boardwalk when, you know, teenagers go wild. Yeah. I mean, that's fun. There is totally that you can go down the street and get that. And that's a beauty that we have that. Only we have that here in New Jersey. And if you want to experience fist pumping, you got to come to Jersey to do it just in the summertime.
Yeah.
There's a thing called local summer. So as soon as the holiday's over or the summer ends, it becomes local summer. And then a lot of people just disappear. And then, you know, it's like the tide goes out before the tsunami again next year of the wave of people that come back. But, you know, we pride ourselves on tourism and respite for people. You know, I mean, this has been for hundreds of years that people have been doing this. So it's to be here, to be from here, it's a really cool place to represent because the food scene's incredible. We get direct, you know, everything, you know, my parents are from New York originally, so we would go to New York as kids. So all this food is trickled down the shore, right? Mm. And all this food is trickled up to the city because all this fresh seafood. So, you know, it's a beautiful proximity is so great because I can get to the city if I need to be there and eat and do work or whatever. But being from here, it's a cool place to brag about because most people don't give it a bad name, you know, but they've never been here when they say, oh, Jersey, where's your accent? It's like, wait a second. Have you ever been there? It's amazing, you know, and we're just shy of the city. So, I think it's a bad rep, but I think people that know. And then eventually when they see for themselves, like, oh, this is not like it was on TV. This is totally different. So.
Totally different. I mean, working in the restaurant industry there, was that something that was like an aspiration at the time or was it kind of like, all right, I need to get a job?
Yeah, I mean, it started honestly at 10. My dad put a spatula in my hand and taught me how to make eggs. And then 4 years later, I'm working at 14 in a pizza place washing dishes. And so I was pretty young. Usually that wouldn't happen at 14, but we knew the family and they let me work there. And that's when, you know, I come from humble beginnings, I guess, as far as food is concerned, because my parents were New Yorkers and they're of the generation of like, if you didn't eat the food that was on the plate, you didn't eat. And it's like a lot of things came out of cans, you know, it's a canned food generation. At least my parents were. So,
same.
You know, it wasn't until we came down here till I was born here. But my parents came down here where they were exposed to. I mean, it is the Garden State, as I mentioned. So there's all this great produce. There's markets everywhere. We even grew for the first time. You know, we had a garden. It was amazing. My mom got too much manure and the things were, you know, there were like 60 pound eggplants. And,
wow.
as a kid, you know, so as far as the restaurant industry, it was my first job. So I quickly, it was exciting because I guess why I'm talking about the my parents' background of food is that it exposed me to so much other kinds of food and how food is prepared. And it just kind of opened my world by washing all the, you know, the hard cheese off the pans and, you know, and really sinking in and getting my hands dirty. And, you know, it was a respect between the front of the house and the back of the house. There was a front of the house, even in a pizza place, and the back of the house where they're making pizzas and where they're, you know, washing dishes. So, I learned a lot just by observing and just putting my head down and going to work at 14. It was like,
yeah,
because without the dish room, without the dishwasher, everything kind of crumbles. And it's like, you realize that because they tell you that. you're going to yell that, like, we need case. We need these now. Okay. Stop eating pizza, you know?
You can't mess with people's pizza cravings either. So.
No, that's the thing. And that's, you know, it's a big staple here. You know, there's a pizza place literally on every corner. Like, every town has at least two throughout the state.
What are some other quintessential Jersey foods, would you say?
Because, you know, it's rich in its agriculture, at least it was for a very long time. You know, there's tons of local produce in season. Seafood, there's no question. There's a lot of, culturally, there's a lot of pockets of different people here, which is amazing, which makes up very much like the city. You culturally have different pockets, Italian, Irish, Caribbean. And so for Jersey here, it's seafood, it's pizza, it's, you know, boardwalk food is a huge thing, you know, so it's like everything fried is quintessentially Jersey.
Custard.
But again, yeah, I mean, you know, what's cool. Custard really came up through the South, as I understand it. But they, you know, Delaware, there's a place called Dickie's in Delaware in Bethany Beach. And they do this amazing custard with fresh peaches, which is incredible, which I brought back here and made it for all my friends, which is kind of amazing. I'm plugging Dickie's because we filmed there. So it was great.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of Italian food here.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot of Italian folks here. My mom's Italian. My dad's Irish. So we fit in right well. We fit in pretty good, even though I've basically have the face of Ireland. yeah, there's, you know, quintessentially Jersey, it's seafood, pizza, and boardwalk food. I would say your Zeppelis, your funnel cakes, your fried everything. You know, hot dogs, hamburgers. I feel like it's like a constant barbecue in New Jersey. Everyone's grilling. Everyone's outside. It's different in the city because you can't really do that stuff. So it's like
true barbecue,
being outside, being in the lawn, in the backyard, cooking out. You know, cooking outside is a big thing here, too, especially even it's like a four season thing now with grills where they've come, you know.
Are you team pork roll or Taylor ham? What do you call it?
Yeah, exactly. There's a dividing line between the middle of the state where they would be considered Central Jersey and where I'm at, which is the shore. So to answer your question, it would be team pork roll. Just that's how you grow up. It's like, you know, my dad is a Giants fan and a Yankees fan. So I pretty much became a Giants and Yankees fan. You inherit these things.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
I didn't
ask
for this.
That's what your dad
but
said.
It is pork roll. But, you know, the thing is, if we can all enjoy it equally, I think that's important. You know?
I agree.
Because Taylor Ham is the brand, pork roll is the thing, right?
That's true. What for somebody listening that is not, you know, aware of what this product is, can you explain what pork roll is?
It's a pork product it's from snout to tail, and it's made in a roll form, looks like essentially like bologna.
Okay. Yep.
And a fattier bologna, and you slice it and you grill it. Basically, it's on a flat top. So I personally like it pretty well cooked just because it has a great texture when cooked. So think of Spam, but thinner with less bits in it. But it's delicious on your Kaiser bun with cheese and egg and ketchup, salt, pepper, typically.
Of course.
That's what people go for. You know, and there's no shortage of that. So it's like, you know, everyone asks, where's the best pork roll in Jersey? I was like, there's so many pork roll places in Jersey. You got to go find them yourself. There is no best. I don't think there's a best of anything. I think it's like, people ask me all the time, what's the best of anything? Pizza, burgers. I was like, I'm always chasing the next one. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not thinking about the last one as much as I'm thinking about the next one. So, you know, I think choose adventure. Don't choose, you know, better or worse is what I say to people.
Do you like to cook? I know you mentioned the scrambled eggs at age 10. Have your cooking skills evolved since then?
10. Yeah. From 10 on. So, you know, I was lucky enough for my father to either not want me to burn the house down by teaching me how to cook, or he's probably tired of me asking him to cook me eggs. And that gave me like this skill set. And it was like really kind of, it was like empowering, right? I mean, I tell you, if you have kids, put a spatula in their hand as soon as you think they're ready, because it was really empowering for me because I learned so much just by not burning myself, you know, that respect, you know, the heat, respect the flame. So that turned into working in washing dishes, that turned into working in the back of the house. Cause you basically eventually graduate. Cause that's one skill set you have in a kitchen. And, you know, it's one of the only places you could still learn by doing and work your way up, you know? And I think that's a beautiful thing that our industry or the restaurant industry, you're able to still do that. You could start by washing dishes and end up cooking, you know, be a sous chef, you know, without necessarily going to culinary school. So for me, that's what I was able to do. You know, I worked my way up through the back of the house in kitchens, and to basically to short order cook, right? That was kind of as far as I got. And then I realized all the money's in the front of the house and I talk too much. So they put me in the front of the house. So I started waiting tables, bartending, but it started with running food, bussing tables, you know, that sort of thing. And then it graduated to bartending and waiting tables and then management. But, you know, I did some culinary in vocational culinary in high school, which really all the knife skills, you know, all the things I had learned when I was a kid just made sense when, you know, when the chef puts a knife in your hand. So I was lucky to have that experience that just kept me from cutting myself when I was that line cook and working summers in a kitchen on the beach. And then with Man versus Food, you know, we've done six seasons at this point. That's 200 and some odd restaurants.
Wow.
You know? So I feel like I went from short order to sous. You know, I feel like that's where my confidence level is now, because all those cooking experiences in all those kitchens with all those chefs and those folks in the kitchen, it's been so, and that's been empowering. You know, you think about one spatula when your dad hands you a spatula, and teaches you eggs. I had 270 some odd dads teach me and moms and kitchen folk teach me how to cook their way. So yeah. You know, and that's not lost on me. There wasn't, at least. And that's what's the most exciting part of the show for me is like, I'm learning, I'm deepening my skill set by just listening, you know, even though I'm there to talk and lead the show and mine for sound bites for the show. But it's like the skill set as a result is incredible, you know. So, yeah, it's been an incredible journey with that, you know, from 10 to however old I am now, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, knowing your career path now and that you did end up moving to New York to pursue acting, can you, you know, I know you said you were always a talker. Did you have like those performative streaks growing up? Like what piqued that interest in wanting to become a performer?
So I guess I was, being the youngest of two, I was always jockeying for attention from, be it my parents, be it my brother's friends, my family. So I really had a, you know, it was competitive, you know, for other people's time, you know? And so I think it just kind of something that this came naturally, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put that energy into sports, which helped kind of focus my energy without using, you know, using the lip service. And so, you know, I didn't start acting until after I got out of high school. So I played sports, went to college, played some football, and then I started doing theater, and then I got to improv and sketch and stand up. And there was a lot of time between when I started that and when I got the show. And I lived in New York City three different times, but it was the last time that I went back. And I realized, like, I tried every other job. You know, I tried to do what everyone else is telling me that I was supposed to do. And then I realized, like, you know what, like, none of this is working. I should really be listening to myself. And I did. And then I went back to New York and I just started auditioning and bartending. I was couch sitting, dog sitting, cat sitting, taking every shift I could. I was Airbnb my apartment. But, you know, the thing is, there was a hustle that I had, and I loved working so much in the industry, and I loved working so much in the acting industry. So, you know, one day it really hit me. It was like, I wasn't quite happy bartending. I was like, what's wrong? Why am I just happy acting? Like, wait a second, you're the same person. And then just a light went off. And I started my whole kind of career switched gears because my attitude changed. And it was really about focusing on the work, stay the course. And that's when I started. It actually happened when I had an audition for some comedy cop show. And I shaved my beard and I had a mustache, and I didn't get that job, but okay. I got every job after that. It was like five commercials, and then it was Man versus Food. And, you know, it was just that one slight change of attitude, and just, you know, got rid of the beard, and I wound up, you know, landing Man versus Food, and that just set me off in a whole other trajectory. I mean, it like launched me into the stratosphere, into the food space. So we've been doing that since 2017.
Wow.
The show specifically, with a little bit of break there.
Yeah.
When we all had a break.
When we all had that one break that we all had for a couple years.
Yeah, we all went on vacation at home.
At home.
We all stayed home for 2 years.
I don't think you can say this as much anymore, but Man versus Food is kind of a show that just stands alone. It's one of those shows you put it on when no one can agree on what you want to watch because everybody likes it. Were you a fan of the show before you became the host?
I knew the show was on and I caught it a bunch. But, you know, quite honestly, I hit the pavement to audition for to actually work and was working a ton. Didn't travel much and didn't watch a lot of TV. I was like not even in my apartment all the time. So I knew the show and I was like, this is such a fun show. It's so different than these traditional food shows. It's just a whole other adventure. And I honestly thought it was still in the air when they brought it back in 2017, because they run in syndication. They just keep playing them, you know? And that's a funny story, is that when I auditioned for it, they were saying, oh no, this isn't Man vs. Food. This is a show called Big Eats. And I was like, oh, okay. This feels like a lot like Man vs. Food, still thinking that it was on. And then when I wound up getting it, you know, the first piece of paper, first part of the contract said, it said Big Eats. I was like, oh, okay, this is the show that I auditioned for. And the second page said Big Eats. And then the third page, it said Man vs. Food. I was like, no way. Come on. I knew it. And so that's when, you know, it dawned on me like what this was going to be potentially, because they weren't sure what it was going to be, because the show had been off the air for 5 years before they brought it back. So 2012 is when it went off the air, the new episodes. And then it was 5 years later that they brought it back. And I was like, and that's been since then. So it's almost going on 6 years, you know?
Casey tells us how he got the job hosting Man vs. Food, and he reveals how he prepares for those insanely huge and spicy meals. That's coming up next.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What was the audition process like? I mean, you said you were kind of, you know, just auditioning for everything and, you know, commercials, whatever the work was that came across your desk kind of thing.
You know, as luck would have it, I did this project in LA that led to the director introducing me to an agent in New York City. And then I started pitching some shows to him and I pitched him a food show, and he was being nice to me and he's like, oh, I like the food show. Why don't you shoot a proof of concept? That's basically like a mini version or a trailer of what a show would be. I was filming that. And he's like, hey, I got an audition for this food show. Do you have any desire to audition for it? I was like, yeah, I'm out here filming this thing. Yeah, sure. I never hosted a live show or a show on TV, you know, as in programming, I've done live shows before. And it just kind of landed in my lap. And so it started off with an interview with a producer, very much like how you and I are talking, you know, via Zoom. I, you know, was in my apartment. And my apartment was immaculate, by the way. And I was in my kitchen and I had taken my computer out of the closet because I was Airbnb in my apartment.
Of course.
And, you know, it was like, the host's closet that locks. I had all my stuff in there jammed in. So I sat down and had this interview with a producer and she was lovely and like walked and talked through like just the Q&A kind of stuff, like answering questions about myself, my experiences. And then she was like, oh, are you ready to talk about food and have food prepared and talk about food? And honestly, there's nothing in my apartment. And I was like, can you give me a second? And I just actually got up from my kitchen table and went to the fridge. And the only thing I had in the fridge was, I think it was like Arm & Hammer baking soda to refresh it and a bottle of moonshine. And so I took out that bottle of moonshine that I was bringing with me when I was leaving, when that Italian couple was coming in like a half an hour. And I talked about moonshine for 20 minutes and that led to the physical audition for the show. So not only did I have this interview via, I guess it was FaceTime at the time, it led to a physical interview where we actually did a mini version of the show where there was a kitchen beat. There was what we call DRIs or dining room interaction. And then there was an actual challenge at a place called Clinton Hall, which there's several of them in the city now, which is a great place. If you love burgers and outside games and, so yeah, I had to really try to eat a giant burger and fries and like, but it was all condensed. It was like, we did this whole thing in like 20 minutes because they were bringing other people into audition. So yeah, it was, I really like to think it was talking about moonshine for 20 minutes. I'm pretty good on my feet. So yeah, that was, and it was legit because like, you know, a friend of mine brought it up from the Carolinas and, you know, he was giving it to me and I was going to go share it with friends. And so there's a story there, you know, and like, that's the beauty about food. There's always a story of some kind, whether it be from your family and how you got to make this, prepare this food, or, you know, that's, I think the best form of storytelling is sharing food or cooking food or preparing food with someone or people, or, you know, that's the beauty about tradition and coming together on. A lot of people do Sunday sauce and they, you know, they come together as families traditionally on Sundays and or the holidays, you know, so like that segue from how I got the show to storytelling to food. And yeah, it was an interesting process. And I was told later on that that was the reason. It was really about, you know, just connecting with moonshine and sharing that story is why I think I got the job.
Yeah. I mean, I think storytelling is so important, especially in a show like this, because you don't want it to just be about these crazy challenges. Like you said, there's so many people that you've had this opportunity to meet and interact with and, you know, prop up their businesses and that kind of thing. I think that part is really cool. But I know people are, you know, kind of like very interested in these crazy challenges. How do you prepare? Do you prepare or do you just like kind of go into it and wing it?
At first, I winged it. And that was a mistake because, I learned a lot. I learned a tremendous amount because it is an undertaking. Because, you know, if you've ever seen the show, it's either something huge or hot. And the poundage varies depending on where we're at. And, you know, I was lucky enough to, there's other people that do this more successfully than I do. And they do it more often than I do. So I was able, and, you know, historically they have done it. And so I had some pros to refer to help me along the way, how you actually prepare to take on something huge versus something hot. And, you know, if anything, it really taught me how to respect food and especially the hot stuff. You know, I grow hot peppers to this day, and I'm thankful that I haven't, you know, after, you know, 90 episodes, I haven't been turned off food. So and you mentioned earlier, you know, everyone can agree on maybe watching Man vs. Food because it's like, oh, it's fun to watch. And, you know, that was one of the coolest things that I was hearing when the show started airing, because I was like, I don't know if this is going to last. Like, who's watching this? Why would anybody want to watch this? I was just completely questioning the whole thing. But it was when parents would come up to me or hit me up on social media and in a direct message and be like, hey, you know, we just want to say we love the show because we can make dinner and put the show on and kids can watch it. There's no... It's clean, it's safe, and you know, it's fun and it's exciting. I was like, oh, okay. Like, because after the first season, I was like, I don't know if I could actually physically do this anymore. You know, like, this is a lot. We were shooting 3 episodes in a row, like on the road, you know, and that's 3 challenges on the road. So I was like, this is a lot. And then it was like, oh, someone had mentioned, it was like, oh, you know, we have the potential of increasing business of these restaurants that you travel to, not just Man vs. Food, but all other shows that travel logs by 40%. You can increase their business. I was like, whoa, that's amazing. Like, okay, so, you know, it's good for kids. It's fun. It's funny. It's safe to watch. And then we're potentially helping someone's business. So I was like, okay, I'm in. I'm in for as long as I can, you know, as handle long as it. I can do it, as long as I can handle it, I'm going to do it. So, you know, like I said, it's been 6 seasons and 90 episodes and we're still trucking along. So
yeah. How much of a break do you get between episodes or meals that you're shooting?
Meals. So typically, you know, we moved from 3 episodes in a row, which means that's, you know, for instance, so we went from 3 to 2 to 3 to 2, 3 to 2 in a season. We would do 3 episodes on the road, come back, have a break, then go out and do 2, come back and then go out and do 3. Mm. That was a lot on production. That was a lot on Casey. That's me. and we realized, I was like, okay, we got a bunch of episodes out. Great. So we went down to 2. So typically fly out, land, go to the hotel. Next day we shoot for 3 days. The third day is the challenge day. So at the end of that third day, the last hour is when, you know, 3 cameras go up, the lights go up, the crowd forms behind us, and then we do the challenge. Mm. Which is like as real as it gets. So that's our Friday. That's our Friday night. So as soon as the challenge is over, whether I finish it or not, cameras go down, lights go down, and then everyone loads up in the caravan and we're off back to the hotel to the next place. Mm. So it's fast. But it's, you know, it's 3 days of shooting for a 22-minute episode. So there's a lot of filming for one episode. And then the next day we would travel to the next place. And then that following day, we would start again three days in a row filming challenge on that last day. And then we'd fly out. So it's like 8 days on the road and then 10 days off in between.
Okay.
Roughly to digest.
To digest.
All 6 of those restaurants and then 2 of those challenges.
It's a lot.
A journey.
What are you eating when the cameras aren't rolling? Like how hard is it to balance?
Carrots.
Yeah. Carrots. Salad, some roughage.
I eat really clean regardless. And I always kind of have, I'm just a big guy and I, you know, I just look like I eat a lot, you know? you gotta find some balance and you really gotta trust your gut. You know, I learned a lot about that stuff. It's in the process of doing the show is really taking care of yourself when the camera's off, because honestly, you know, restaurant food, you know, oftentimes higher in fat, higher in sugar, higher in carbs. And these
sodium.
Are all the foods we crave.
Yeah.
Sodium, all the above, you know, and we love to eat out and I eat out often. But I think it's finding the balance between what's really good for you and what's helping you and the foods that you crave, you know, because if I eat all the foods that I craved all the time, I don't know if I would be in my fighting shape to do the show, you know, because you really got to find the balance there. And that's an individual's pursuit, you know. So I found my balance and what works for me and what doesn't. And when the show is on, it's a different story because we, you know, it's like, you know, but the cool thing about the 2 other restaurants that we visit, you know, we get to explore that restaurant fully. The show is really about the challenge, but like, I love the fact that we get to taste these other foods, whether they be something of tradition in that city or a place that's been there forever or a new, cool, fun place. And then it's about the third day is about challenge. So we get to explore a lot in a small time and it's not a lot of time. You know, it's like 3 days. Typically, if it's the second episode of that run, when we're on the road, I might stay, you know, like we went to in the beginning, they're like, hey, where do you want to go? Where do you want to? I'm like, Hawaii, you know,
of course.
And then we went to Hawaii. I was like, no way. I'm just going to throw another place in Alaska. They're like, then we went to Alaska. So,
wow.
And then I would stay and then I would find myself at the other, you know, when we joined up somewhere else, hopefully on that side of the coast, you know, on the West coast or wherever it was. So I've been able to do that a lot. I've been able to extend stay, which is incredible. You know, like I stayed in Alaska for 6 days afterwards. And then I flew to Portland and then I flew to Seattle. Then I drove down to San Jose. So I got to do this crazy adventure, you know?
Yeah.
So, listen to me going on.
No, it's amazing. No, I love it. I mean, I wanted to ask you about the travel as well. I mean, what are some of your favorite food cities that you've had the opportunity to visit?
You know what? I think all cities are food cities. Some are smaller than others. Some are bigger than others. And, you know, it wasn't until I started going to those places where it's like, we find nooks and crannies. We find the places that have been there for 50 years and we find the new places, which is really great. We have a, you know, a team of producers that really dig deep for places. And so, you know, I didn't realize some of the places, these smaller markets, these smaller towns, these smaller cities that were thriving with really cool food, and whether they, you know, whether there's a distillery or a brewery or Michelin star place, like there's places around the entire country that are worth visiting. And I didn't know that until we got there. And I wouldn't really do a ton of research because I really like to show up with like a kid's sensibility and discover stuff and then mm-hmm. learn from locals. And then while I'm there, you know, at night, like while I'm doing my homework for the next day, like figure it out where I'm going to spend my time after we're done shooting. So, you know, I was really surprised, and it was exciting, like in a smaller market, no place specifically, that I found that people that like grew up there, call it anywhere in middle America, they left to go to a bigger city, whether it be New York City, Chicago, Detroit, LA, and craft their skills, and then come back to where they grew up. And then there was that distillery, there was that brewery. Like, where'd you go to, you know, where'd you do all this? Well, I was in Austin for a long time doing barbecue, and then I came back here and brought it back home. And I was brewing beer in Detroit, and then I came back, and you know, now I'm down in Florida. So, you know, it was really beautiful to see what they went away, learned mm-hmm. their skill sets and brought it back, and then created their own thing where the place where they grew up. And it really changed the kind of the landscape of a lot of these smaller markets where you wouldn't think there'd be, you know, because there's a lot of fast food on the road, mm-hmm. you know, and but there's a lot of other places that have percolated in the last, you know, in my experience, last 10 years traveling, that are worth the journey to those smaller areas, you know, the smaller. But for me, love New Orleans. The first time I went there was before I started doing the show, and I just fell in love. And then we got to do an episode there. And that's a major food city for me. On the episode, I got to cook with, I sat there and listened as she talked, but Leah Chase of Dookie Chase, she was in her mid to late 90s then. She has since passed, but she taught me to make Creole gumbo from scratch. And I'm like, oh my God, she could barely walk, but she could stand and talk. And she did. And she was so funny. And for 2 hours after we were filming, we sat there and we sat at a poker table in the kitchen, and food kept coming in, and people would come greet her and see her because she was like, she was a huge part of that community. And we just talked, and she fed me, and I met all these people that I would maybe never see again. And that was that's a special place for me. But, you know, I'm always in search of like the nooks and crannies. For me, I like to like hit the ground running in a city, in a place that I'm going to, because that's the only way you don't really see it driving by often.
Yeah.
You know, you got to walk the city. So that's how I try to discover new places. You know, but you would ask about other cities. I mean, New Orleans is a mecca for food. New York is a mecca for food. Chicago is a mecca for food. And I think this is growing. I think that is trickled into these smaller communities, because I'm from a smaller community. You know, I'm from the suburbs of New Jersey, and the kind of what we get from New York is incredible, because everything trickles down here, you know? So it's, you know, I think it's, you have to be willing to look and search and find in any city that you're going to. And, you know, one of the cool things about doing the show is that a lot of people, they're like, we went to every place that you went to when you were in Iowa. We went to all three of those places. Like, that's really cool. Like,
that's awesome.
It was our vacation. We were going there because the kids going to college there. And we went to all three of those places, and it was really great. Thank you so much. And like that was inspiring. I was like, oh, cool. So we're actually helping people navigate around the country, and it's not just not just Man vs. Food, but all the other travel logs, you know. So, you know, we're giving people a roadmap,
yeah,
to find great foods, you know. And if we're helping keep people in business, then, you know, I'll continue to do what I'm doing, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's
a long way to get to.
It's okay. I like story time with Casey.
Kids, you ready? You ready for story time?
Can you put to rest any skepticism that's out there that the show is somehow staged? Apparently Reddit has a field day with this one.
Oh, I've read it before. I encourage any and all to come to a taping. So yeah, I can only speak for myself and the 90 episodes that I've done, and I've done all of them. Whether I was successful or not, it's as real as it gets. And that's literally the last hour of the shooting. And that's, like I said, it's our Friday. And as soon as I'm done, it's done. And we shut everything down. You know, I would tell you, this has changed from the beginning. Like, we definitely changed some of the heat items, some of the hot items. Because in the beginning, we were using, like, we let chefs use extract So pure capsaicin, which is basically, I would say you could define it as poison, right?
liquid fire.
pretty much liquid fire. So we're like, why don't, can we control this a little bit? Or how about we just use only fresh or dried? I'm like, I'll do whatever, but just to, you know, so that was, that's the only thing that has changed. But as far as it being real or not, it's 1,000% real. I have the different pant sizes to prove it. I have the sweatpants to prove it. There are times where, you know, what's interesting about that too, I was like, I'm about to do the challenge. There's a crowd behind me. There's three cameras. There's lights set up. All I see is lights, you know, and the food in front of me. And all I hear is a crowd behind me. And there were times like, there's no way I'm finishing this, you know, like as confident as you have to go in. Cause it's like a sport, you know, it's like a one person sport. This, you know, it's man versus food, but it's a one person sport. And you really have to get yourself psyched up. If I didn't have this sports background that I had, honestly, like, I don't think I would have been able to make it as far as I have. It's, you really got to bring yourself somewhere else. And that was exciting to me because that became its own challenge. Like, I have to mentally prepare as well as I do physically.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for the crowd, and I could tell you out of 90, probably, you know, 25 of them, if it wasn't for the crowd cheering on, that pushed me to a whole other level, somewhere psychologically, physically, and I beat it. And it's like, whoa, I don't know how that happened. I have no idea. And I get chills talking about it because it's so real. It was really the crowd that pushed me over to actually finish the thing. And there's only so much room, you know, like I'm a 5'9 guy, you know, and I can only physically eat so much. I don't know how some people do it. I don't know how my brother does it. He's 6'2. He can eat for days. Like he just keeps eating. To answer your question, yes, it's all real. It's just chopped down. You know, we have a half an hour, you see probably a minute of it. You know,
that's
the only thing that's edited is the time that we do it. Otherwise it's as real as it gets.
Yeah. No, that's so interesting what you say about the crowd, because that is like, you hear, you know, I worked in sports for so many years and you hear that from athletes all the time. Like I couldn't have done it without like the crowd behind me. That's what really like pushed me over the edge. So it's interesting to hear that translates into food challenges as well. no, this has been so much fun. I could talk to you forever about
this. Thank you.
But we're going to finish things out with some rapid fire questions and then one final question for you.
Yes.
All right. So rapid fire round, theme song for your life.
Thunder Road, Bruce Springsteen.
Okay, I like that.
Love Bruce. I'm a big Bruce fan.
Yeah, I mean, you're from Jersey, so it makes sense. Most difficult challenge to date on Man versus Food.
They're all difficult in their own right. I would say the first hour one we had to do, it was an hour long, and by minute 22, I was like, just can we just stop? And that was in Montana, and it was a huge steak. It was fries.
Where? I'm from Montana, actually.
Yeah, we were in Billings.
Billings, okay.
And it was the food is incredible, but there comes a point where, and I think that was the first time I was like, whoa, you know? and honestly, it was the first one because that was this like 5-pound sandwich.
Oh, wow.
And then it was the Billings one. But I think I think there's more out there that are probably would beat those. I think it's the one I haven't done yet is what I usually say.
But that's like the one like you remember. Yeah. Best prize you've gotten from a challenge on the show.
Back to the crowd. I think it's really the response of the people that were there and how excited they got to be part of the thing and the smiles from that. I would say, you know, that and the travel to these obscure places, be it Hawaii, you know, those were the benefits, you know, as far as physical prizes, a lot of it's merch, you know, it's like a shirt, you know, or an apron or a fireman's little plastic fireman's hat. And, you know, those are all cute, but it's really meeting all these people and just their stories. And then the travel part has been the greatest part of, I think, doing the show for me.
Speaking of travel, something you never travel without.
I learned early on, noise canceling headphones for flying. Big one. That's a huge one. And a speaker, a Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah.
So you have some music in the room.
I love that. Favorite late night snack.
Ooh. You know, I'm a chocolate person, so I could dig into a quart of anything chocolate. So, but the problem with that is it's like a time release. So 3 hours later, I'm wide awake, you know, on the computer typing nonsense, you know. So I'd say late night snack would be ice cream, something chunky in the middle of it too.
Okay.
Like a textured ice cream. Yeah. Of some kind.
Definitely. All right. If man versus food went international, where are you going first?
Wow. Asia.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Let's go to Asia. Let's go to Europe. Let's go to the Middle East. Let's go, you know, I think, those are places that I've yet to explore personally. So, those are on the docket for, I would love to go to Canada. Let's go to Canada with the show. Let's do the Caribbean, you know, let's go there. Let's explore. But yeah, there's no place. You know, a lot of those folks, they're like, when are you coming to Ireland? I'm like, I don't know. That's not entirely up to me. You know, it's, but yeah, there's fans all over, which is really cool that people watch a show all over the world, which is incredible.
Yeah, that's a whole awesome. Other thing. Well, we have one final question for you. This is not rapid fire. This is just the same question we ask everybody at the end of our conversations. And that is, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So we want to hear what you were eating for breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. There are no rules. You can travel, time travel, spend as much money as you want. Anyone can cook the meals. It's your day. We just want to hear about it.
I'm a huge fan of preparing food from the night before. So I'm a huge fan of leftovers.
Same.
I don't know if it's, you know, it's pretty humble, based on your question, that's a pretty humble approach to it.
No.
But I would say it would have to be somewhere outside of where I am, you know. I would say Italy, Pavarotti is cooking, and because he's going to sing, right?
Yeah, okay.
At the same time, he's going to sing and cook at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because I am somewhat Italian.
Yeah.
And I've never been to Italy.
Okay.
And I just have such a love affair of that country, not being, you know, having visited there. So I would say breakfast with Pavarotti.
Okay. That sounds incredible. Doesn't matter what he's cooking, because you're having breakfast.
The guy sing. Yeah. Just to hear the guy sing, sung like an angel. There's a Ron Howard did a documentary about Pavarotti, and I've seen it on the plane. I watch it on the plane every time I fly, and I ultimately cry. I don't know if it's because of the altitude. It's just the guy had such a crazy special life, and you know, he's a big guy too. I feel, you know, the big guys I got a soft spot for, you know,
kinship. Yeah.
My girlfriend might not like that. She can come along too. She can come along too.
She's invited.
She's invited. Of course.
All right. So that's breakfast. What are you having for lunch?
Oh, there's all meals.
All the meals. Yeah. We want to know all the meals.
Oh, okay. Are these all different people? Pavarotti with me to Thailand? No,
I mean, you can if you want, but like, you don't have to. You can say goodbye to Pavarotti and then like hop on a supersonic jet to Thailand for lunch if you want.
I think, you know, I as a young person and being in the restaurant business and just being enamored with travel and exploring, even though I never got to leave, I traveled throughout New York City. And that was my food experiences around the quote unquote, the world. Right. So, and I think who did it best was Anthony Bourdain. So,
sure.
You know, he was always someone special to me growing up, you know, reading his book and then watching his shows. It was just very different than any of the other formatted shows that were on TV, you know? So that was exciting for me. So I would say, you know, I would say lunch in Thailand with Anthony Bourdain.
Love that.
You know? Yeah.
And then, So where are we headed for dinner?
Dinner. I would say, dinner. Where can we go for dinner? I've never been to France. I would love to go to France with Jacques Cousteau, because that guy is to meet his grandson. Jacques Cousteau in France, because I feel like that guy would know a thing or two about seafood in let's say Paris.
Sure.
I've never thought about this until right now. So yeah.
I love it. I love being on this journey. I love it.
Because the guy has so many stories and he's been on the open water more times than, you know, probably Carnival Cruises, you know? So he probably has a thing or two to share about his experiences.
I love that. I remember I did a report on Jacques Cousteau, like in elementary school. And then I named my cat Jacques. Like I had a cat.
Come on.
I had a cat named Jacques, like Kitty all Jacques. Through all through That's my cool. Yeah, it was super random. All right. Are you so ice cream for dessert or are you going somewhere else?
Ice cream? You know what? Maybe back to New York what are we gonna do? How about L&B Spumoni ice cream in
there you go.
Brooklyn?
Yeah, all right.
That's probably the way to go because that's amazing. I just had it recently. So that's the That's the first thing I'm thinking about.
Wash it down with some pizza.
Wash it down with, yeah, square pizza, a couple squares. I have a quart of it in my freezer because I was there recently. Yeah, it's
pretty amazing. All right. Well, perfect. That sounds like a wonderful food day. And we are so looking forward to more episodes of the show. It's always a delight. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Enjoy watching Man vs. Food. And I'll see you on the road. Eat well.
You can catch Casey on new episodes of Man vs. Food on Cooking Channel Tuesdays at 9, 8 Central and catch up on old episodes, which are streaming on Discovery Plus. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.